Are you sure?
They're alien words.
Are you sure, though?
1950s alien words. Do you remember when we did Santa Claus Conquers the Martians?
It all seems like alien words to me.
I mean, if you really want to think about it, even Earth Girls Are Easy. Like, these are the names of the aliens.
Nip Nup, Zim Zom, and Dippity Doo.
Glathatu, Barata, Nikto. Like, oh, it's a demon. Oh, it's, you know, it's a devil. Ah. But I mean, Ash is still acting like a very present modern day man.
Yes. Yes. It's fantastic. So the wizard, the wise man, comes up to the edge of the pit and he's like, chosen one, I think he calls him, right? He goes, chosen one. And he's like battling this hag and she's like, rah, 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 and like, oh, and at some point Arthur's like, the spikes. And so somebody starts.
The spikes, I think, are saved for the second deadite.
Oh.
It's after he gets, because I have, maybe not, because I do have also spikes. Here's your chainsaw. Epic timing.
Okay, yeah. So I think he calls for the spikes. Then he's thrown his stump covering chainsaw. And then he like takes down the hag.
Right.
And then he's trying to find a way to get out of the pit. And so he like runs away from the chain, which is just stupid. And he runs to the wall and he tries to climb it. And that's when our second deadite, who's been hiding, pops out. And this thing looks freaky.
Yeah.
It's all like bubbly. And I wouldn't be surprised if it was Ted Raimi in there.
It is not.
Oh, man. Because he was the old lady in the previous two movies. So Sam Raimi lives to shove him in a latex suit and seems sweat his balls off.
Billy Bryan, the actor who portrays the second monster in the medieval pit, also portrayed this Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man in Ghostbusters.
He's much more animated in this.
Yeah. And so when the walls are coming in, the chain's moving. Mm-hmm. So Ash goes over to the chain and kind of uses it as an elevator.
He takes his belt off.
Yeah. And then he like swings it and it like he's using it as a lasso, essentially.
It slaps a knot somehow. But he's El Jefe. You just got to let like when things work real good for him, you just have to assume it's the magic inherent in his being.
I have a intermediary comment on something that I think is one of my favorite.
Is that a Jen thought?
It's a
Jen Tha.
My thoughts on Bruce Campbell, the thought. So Bruce Campbell does like cut off the hand of the hag. I think the first one, and that
flies up through the air,
and the metal worker. What do you call them?
It's not the blacksmith.
Yeah, it's the blacksmith.
No, the blacksmith has a Fu Manchu. This was a scrawny old man.
No.
The hand getting in the face, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah,
the scrawny old man comes later.
Oh.
When he's like, you want some?
No, I'm thinking of somebody else. There are three people that we've just mentioned. There's the guy who's just like, I don't want any, right? And then there's like the Fu Manchu blacksmith who's just passing judgment all the time, and I love it about him. He's just like, every time you see him, he's like, mm-hmm, or mm-mm. He's just a judgmental blacksmith. This is a scrawny old man who's like a dirty peasant, and he gets the dirty hag hand smacked into his face, and he goes, I can't do it.
You might be right, because I think it was the blacksmith that laughs.
Yeah, the blacksmith is the one that laughs, because he's like totally into the fight.
Yeah. They're all watching it like like they're not dealing with another demon.
Yeah, this is totally, the kickboxing?
MMA?
MMA, sort of.
Or like bear baiting?
Mm.
Yeah. Like, if you look at it objectively, this is terrible. But if you're in the movie with us, and I hope you are, it's hilarious. So he's now being pulled up by the chain that they're still continuously, while the spikes are coming in, and this demon is, like, holding on to his legs, and he kicks and kicks and kicks and kicks. And eventually, he does manage to get his feet out. He swings up just as the spikes crunch in on the demon, which is hell awesome, which is hilarious and awesome. And like, everybody, it goes silent. Right?
Doesn't he pull out his gun the second one?
No.
I thought because if he had the chainsaw.
Sam Raimi's framing it so that you forget about the gun. We haven't seen it since he was marching in the desert. And he got it taken away with him. You don't see it on his back until you only see it in the first part. And then when he's marching, it's gone.
Okay. And it's after he climbs out of the pit and he sets Henry and his men free.
Yes, he gets, take your horses and go. And, okay. and Henry's okay. like, goodbye, my gracious hosts.
Yeah, I remember.
Okay, he's all like, he pulls. Okay, this is just so good. This whole, Jen could probably quote this scene better than I can. But he like, you see him put his stumpy chainsaw out of it, the pit. And then you see his other arm. And then he just pulls himself up in a very like, oh my goodness, sort of way. And he climbs out and he like, he's covered in blood and he's practically black with all of like the grossness on him. And he's just like, all right,
who wants some more?
Yeah, who wants some? And then he goes to the scrawny, like, obvious, the, like the little Napoleon complex guy.
Right. The one who probably pushed him into that.
Let's assume.
Yeah.
And he's just like, you want some? Hey, yeah, you do. You want some? And he like comes at him and he's like shrieking away. And he's like, no. And he like, so Ash turns and walks away. And the guy turns and looks at his comrade next to him. And his comrade's like, didn't you do anything? And he's all like, huh. Like he doesn't come at me, bro, because he's like super emasculated.
Right.
It was delightful.
I think Ash goes over to Arthur because my next note is best shoe late gag because he's like, you got.
Oh, that actually happens before.
That happens before?
It's like the first thing he does.
Okay. Because he says, your shoelaces are untied. And I can just see this guy who's playing Arthur is like, well, that's odd. My shoes don't have lace on. Well, maybe they do. And then when he looks down, that's when he gets clocked in the face by Ash.
He's laid out.
Yeah. It's like the best way to do like the, you have something on your shirt.
Mm-hmm.
You do, you know, point at their shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they look down, you just cut them with an uppercut.
I don't punch people in the, I just run my nose up their, my finger up their nose.
Right. But not unless they just shoved you into a pit with a demon and you had to crawl your way out.
I might take a swing. Yeah.
I would definitely do it that way.
Yeah.
So.
Mm. Well, those things happen.
And then he lets Henry go, and that's
the second monster has to
pit.
Okay,
so he's all like, anybody else want some? And King Arthur is like talking at him, I think. And he's yelling at King Arthur. And
pulls out his sword, right? I think King Arthur at some point pulls out.
No, he hasn't done that. Well, no, he doesn't. He hasn't. Yeah, he does that.
Because that's when the gun comes out, is when he pulls out a sword and then it gets fired out of his hand.
And then we have the boomstick speech.
Yeah.
Jen, do you want to do the boomstick speech and then hit your butt?
Oh, I don't have the whole speech.
He pretty much just says, primitive.
This is my boomstick.
He goes, this is a S-Mart top of the line, a walnut handle, sturdy stock, and a hair trigger. And
you can find this in the sporting goods department.
Runs you about $109.99.
Shop smart.
Shop S-Mart.
And like King Arthur's standing there with his sword and he's all like, so if any of you primitive
screwheads,
even so much as, and he turns around and he goes, ugh! And he points the shotgun and King Arthur's like, oh, shit, right? And then he shoots and it hits the demon that has just come out of the pit, which then does a backflip into the pit, which then we assume it's closed, which would be a good idea.
Yes.
And then that scene is done. Welcome to the first 15 minutes of the movie.
Thankfully, it's like we said, it's a short. It's a short movie.
And there are a lot of action scenes that we only give like the highlights for them.
Because you don't want. And then we are not J.R.R. Tolkien. You're not going to get like, and then the skeletons marched and then they sat and then they marched. We just aren't those people.
This is a podcast. If we describe the action scenes, we would be here forever. And we're already here for like years just for one episode.
One part of an episode.
So what happens next?
Oh.
Obviously, the person who has the most powerful weapon is in charge now.
I think that he saved the king. And so now he's a hero and right. not a zero.
Well, and he kind of also proved himself to be a good fighter against them, and them killing him would just be bad logistics. And with the wise men saying, I think he's the prophecy, blah, 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 then...
He kind of looks like he is. So
yeah.
Maybe they just changed their opinion.
Right. I mean, king's got to do what's right by his people or he's a bad king. Also, Ash cleans up very well.
Okay. Can I say, my goodness, a poet's shirt? Jen, this summer... I'm going to go to the Highland Games with your mother, and I'm going to buy at least four poet shirts and just wear them like a sexy poet. Half of the time I'll pretend I'm Howl, and half of the time I'll pretend I'm Ash, and the other half of the time I'll just be wearing a poet shirt, looking like a poser, writing haikus in our living room. This scene is, I have dubbed, so gross, so satisfying. There's something about, like, if somebody's, like, greasy and it's gross and they're, things dropping from them. And I don't like that kind of what the internet dubs savage eating for the mukbangers among us. But like he's like eating like grapes held to his mouth, which I don't know if you've ever done it. It's delightful. It feels so decadent.
Mm-hmm.
And then he grabs a leg of something and he takes a huge bite of it and he puts that on a plate. And then he takes a glass of a goblet and he like drinks a big old swig of wine. And then somebody proffers him some bread and he takes a piece and he bites it off like with his beautiful, perfect teeth. And he goes, ugh. And I want to hate it, but there's something about, it's like the word unctuous, which I don't generally like, but it's that passion of, it's the hedonist in me that's just like, yeah, enjoy the hell out of that.
You're not enjoying your food unless you're getting messy with it.
I do believe that there's a certain amount of mess that comes with a really good meal, but there's, I don't know if I've told you, I'm sure I've told you the story, but when in kindergarten, when I first met Jamie, like my oldest friend in the whole world, right? She's not old. I've just known her since kindergarten. I remember we were sitting at the, we're in kindergarten and we're sitting at the lunch table. Maybe it was first grade, but we're sitting together and she was eating this apple and like the juice was running down her hand and she was just fully enjoying this apple. Like it was this wonderful, beautiful thing. And up until then, I had been like this, and I still am, a slightly neurotic person who my mother read me Miss Pigglewiggle and the Itty Bitty Bite Takers. And in that somebody's like eating a apple that has been minced and like is eating it with a toothpick, right? Because even at six, I was obsessed with my weight. And so like I had trouble enjoying food. And so when I started observing people who were like really passionately enjoying something, I was just fascinated. And I have sought that the rest of my life. And so when he has this scene and he's just being so, he's finally relaxed for the first time in three f***ing movies.
Right.
I'm just, I love it. And I know I shouldn't. I should think he's a decadent bastard.
Well, he's allowed to be because last three movies.
Yeah, he deserves this scene.
And what else does he deserve but Sheila coming up and essentially apologizing for thinking that he killed her brother?
Forgive me, my lord. I thought thee one of Henry's men.
And he's all like,
first you want to kill me, now you want to kiss me. Blow.
Like, okay, all right. I've read my fair share of deprecating lord romance novels, and there's something for it. Like, women are continuously throwing themselves at, literally and figuratively, at him, and it's just something about it's very good. But she could be a Teddy Ruxpin spouting these lines and none of it matters.
Right, essentially.
I just need him to be arrogant and decadent.
And then the plot arrives. We have the wise men coming in, Arthur, the wise men, people coming in saying, we have this deadite problem. Can you help us with it since you're so good at killing things? And he's just like, look, I just need to get back home. That's my whole motivation at this point, and you need to do something about it. And they're like, well, with the Necronomicon, we could solve our problem and get you home. And that's when we hear water rushing by his feet.
All these vegetables fall down, and he's like, I just want to go home. And then a woman who'd been tending a pot has turned into a deadite.
Why is this like this to me? Seems like the third deadite so far that has been coded as female, because there was one in the pit. And I swear the second one that was all like gross and, you know, it's got the tumors and everything. It looked like she didn't look masculine, looked pretty feminine, which is interesting considering what happens to Sheila later on.
Yeah. What's up with the deadites having a hard on for messing with women?
Yeah.
Although previous movies, same girl, same.
Yeah. So it's interesting, and we can talk about it. Maybe we could talk about my thoughts about it later.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So we have a little battle that ensues. A pot of water gets thrown on Arthur's face. Bruce pulls out his gun. The hag falls down. Arthur goes to touch her, but Bruce grabs his hand and goes, "It's a trap. Get the axe." Right? Which is okay. War awesomeness.
Yeah.
This is where Bruce Campbell has coined the double tap to me. Like, you don't assume the bad guy's dead until he's dead, dead.
Right.
So he goes, yo, she, let's go. Which is what I'm going to say to my cat from now on.
Oh, after he gets her, after he gets this deadite.
Yeah.
He says he's going to need, in order to do this, he's going to need something. Is that where we come to the hand making montage, or is there something else?
No, this is it. He starts pulling everything out of the surprisingly well stocked car of a random S-Mart employee, So he, I mean, if you look in the trunk of his car, he's got so much stuff.
I don't think this is where we see the car. I think this is where he sees the glove of the armor, and then he takes it to the blacksmith, and then he makes
steam. Oh, that is correct. You are correct.
Steam-powered.
You are correct.
Yeah, it's all like whirly gigs and everything.
Yes, and there's a montage of him being mechanically capable in a way that is surprising, because it doesn't really show up in every... This is our first understanding of his ability to manipulate machination.
Right. I like the montage. It's very Edgar Wright, where it's got like every time there's something that gets done, there's like a quick cut to another thing.
Yes. I will excuse myself. There is a montage quite like it where he creates his chainsaw arm in the previous film.
Okay.
So it's precedented. I just, you think of him as such a meathead that right. when he does something very smart, you're like, huh? But he eventually straps into this glove hand. So he can officially have a hand back as an actor, which is a good move, Raimi. Good right. idea. He flexes his hand and he goes,
groovy.
It's great. He like takes a cup and smushes it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yes. And every time he does something like that, they cut to Sheila and the blacksmith, the judgmental blacksmith going,
yeah.
Mr. Campbell.
I know. If you don't mind me getting a little too gross, every time I'm like, damper. Damper, damper, absolutely dripping wet. You see it, though.
I mean, I'm not arguing with you, am I?
No, I'm not. But she, okay.
So, Sheila, this
bitch,
she goes to say goodbye to Ash and...
Well, it's later that evening. It's same day.
Yeah, he's working on his hand. Yeah, he's as just, you do.
He's grinding away at it. She approaches him with something you'd seen her sewing on earlier.
Right.
And she tries to small talk him so hard.
And he's not having any of it because you essentially like pushed him into a pit instead of like, I mean, I get the reason why. Yeah. And she tries to apologize for it here, but it just ends with him insulting her. She slaps him. He's
like, well, he goes, okay, so you see a turn. He goes, what are you even here for? And she's like, I shirt. And he's all like, great, I could use another horse blanket.
Yeah.
And then she's all like super insulted by this. Then she slaps him, runs to the door. He catches her by the arm, which, you know, we hate. But also, do we hate it? And
I mean, like, in a role-playing context,
yes.
In a fantasy context,
yes.
No, I don't. In reality, if someone did that to me...
I would take their nuts off.
Seriously, I would take their... I would gouge out their eyes and then cut off their balls and then switch them.
Beautifully descriptive, Lydia.
I stole that.
Good.
I am not that clever.
True artists steal. It's fine. let's just go with it. He
grabs her, and then they have this like moment of just sort of like attraction.
He brushes her hair and the clip falls out beautifully. Her hair is a little 90s to me, I think, in its lustrousness and thickness. It's very, they're going for a romance novel cover, and I hate it.
Yeah, I know.
Because then he says,
give me some sugar, baby.
And yeah. They kiss. And my notes go, your girlfriend died yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's the Hefe in him.
It is. He's insatiable. And it's hard to not be endeared to an insatiable character.
Okay, so next morning.
It goes, his girlfriend died yesterday, but yes, I'd give him some sugar.
Yeah.
Feel free to cut that, but yeah. I don't want to. It's true.
How about you go ahead and say it one more time so I'm not talking over you?
Dude, your girlfriend died yesterday, but yes, I'd give you some sugar. You can edit that out or altogether, do whatever the hell.
I will edit it as need be.
Should we get back to the plot?
I mean, or we could just spend the rest of our time talking about how hot Bruce Campbell is in this movie.
You have to admit.
It's the next day. He's on a horse and he is wearing the shirt that Sheila made along with some chainmail.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there you go. He's maybe not hating her as much. Maybe he forgave her.
They boned it out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she says later, you know.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there.
So it's the next day. They're heading over to find the path that will lead him to where the Necronomicon is. And
why they send him alone, I don't know.
He's the only one capable of killing Deadites. Everybody else is going to get dead.
I mean,
maybe there would have been some like great warriors that would have. The blacksmith seemed like he was pretty capable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well. You're going to need to go over this hill into a graveyard, and before you take the book, you're going to have to say this phrase.
Clatu Verata Nicto.
That is correct.
Yes.
But that is the again. Only time.
Say it again.
I know
Clatu
you.
Clatu Verata Nicto.
He doesn't say it a second. What does he say it a
he
second
time?
He
says it a second time, but when he's pressed to say it a third time, he's like, I already know it.
I know your damn words.
Yeah.
I would have written it down because mm-hmm. I know me.
I know me too. I would have been like, so you got a way of me like just pulling out the piece of paper and saying it?
I think we all three of us probably already know this, but the words that Ash has to say are also the words that are said to Gort, the robot, to make him stop in The Day the Earth Stood Still in 1951.
Does it mean anything?
Yeah, it means Sam Raimi likes the throwback.
I get that's clever, but does it actually mean anything?
No.
Are you sure?
They're alien words.
Are you sure, though?
1950s alien words. Do you remember when we did Santa Claus Conquers the Martians?
It all seems like alien words to me.
I mean, if you really want to think about it, even Earth Girls Are Easy. Like, these are the names of the aliens.
Nip Nup, Zim Zom, and Dippity Doo.
Clatu, Barata, Nikto.
The only time I find that one guy irresistible. I wanted to in The Fly, but then it got gross.
I know. Forest action scene. Also, trees splitting in two. It's got that whole
The
Raimi cam.
Yeah.
And what's interesting
is... So he's being chased. He's on a horse. He's being chased.
Right. What's great about the visuals in this is that you actually, like, when the camera goes into a tree will split and it happens
yes.
a few different times.
Yes.
It's really nice.
Patented in mm-hmm. the first two films.
Right.
And you'll be shocked about this. Sam Raimi smacks him off his horse with a branch.
Yeah. Doesn't surprise me.
And then he's running because the evil is still after him. And you see him doing the little running motion, and then just he's getting beat with branches. He's just getting smacked over and over again in the face. It's so good. Bruce, we're going to need to do that again.
It's very, I mean, this is one of those action scenes where the camp gets turned up just a little bit more.
Yeah, it only gets worse from here, kiddos.
I did want to just mention that the phrase was never translated in the film, and neither the writer nor 20th Century Fox ever released an official translation on the Clatu Verata Nicto.
I got your big energy right here.
Whoop. Oh, roll downhill, camera follows.
Mm-hmm. Sam Raimi and his misty forests.
Yeah.
He always do.
Right. Bruce gets to a windmill in the middle of nowhere, and then we transition to a nighttime where he's like lighting wood and everything. It feels very much like a callback to Evil Dead 2.
Yeah.
With a cabin in the middle
of
nowhere.
The thing tries to beat itself through the door. He's like you say, he's starting to light a fire. He sees someone standing behind him and he turns and he runs straight into a mirror. And the mirror shatters to the ground.
Yeah.
He picks up a piece and he stares at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he drops it to the ground. And then he sees himself in all these little shards of mirror. And he walks away, but they stay in place. And these are who I call the brownie ashes.
My note here was, this is the real army of darkness. Tiny versions of yourself.
Yes. Yes. Just there. Oh, okay. So I have warmed up to these guys throughout the years. I initially hated them a lot. And then I was like, oh, they're pretty good, I guess. And then I did some more watchings of Willow. And I was like, no, they're pretty stinky good. And like this time I watched them, I'm like, awesome.
A couple of the most notable things is they trip him and his face lands on a hot stove and he's like, ah, and he like grabs a spatula mm-hmm. or like it's a shovel for a fireplace. That's
yeah.
what it looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
And he scoops his face off of it. He doesn't have any like no. burns
it's
on that side.
It's just comedy.
I know.
Did you notice how they came out of the floor, the glass shards on the floor
mm-hmm.
and they like pop out of it and you just for a split second, you're like, oh no, those were holes in a big old wall of stuff. It's right. just so visually pleasing because it's executed so well. And then the hijinks ensue.
Right. My next favorite part.
Hibachi face, I'd call that.
Yeah, hibachi face. And then he starts singing, London Bridge is falling down. And he's like going to stomp on them.
Mm-hmm.
One of them grabs a nail and it goes right through his foot.
And then they go, my fair lady.
I don't know if you realize, we're not supposed to take this movie seriously.
It's just so dumb.
And then,
but like you could... You could seriously, I think, did we make Lucas watch this one? No, I think I made him watch Evil Dead. And I had to really play, because that one's much more serious. I was like, Lou, you need to not be scared by this. You have to go in looking for the funny bits. And that's a little harder to do. And it took halfway through the movie before he was like, ah, this is funny. He's got anxiety like I do. I was like, oh no, I'm going to have to work up to it. But I think this one, if you had to start a younger kid on it, this is a good one to start with.
Right, because it's very obvious that there's like comedy, mm-hmm. and it does like kind of progress to that.
Yeah, but you can laugh now because human laughter, and we've talked about this before, it's the cracking that lets you know that you're going to be okay.
Right.
Which is why there's like ridiculously like insane laughter that he does like when he cuts off his hand, because like you just have to, like your brain will break if you don't laugh. And so like we watching a horror film, we have to have these moments that break that tension. And this movie does it incredibly well in a way that I think brings in audience.
Right.
Raimi's also, he doesn't do it necessarily in this movie, but he's like the king of giving you just a beat of humor before it dives even deeper into horror.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because then super gross things happen.
Getting knocked out and waking up to being Gulliver's Travels.
Yeah, he's a little appuciated up. And he...
They open up his mouth?
Well, no, they hold his nose shut.
Oh.
And so he has to breathe. One of him does a beautiful little swan dive. Like they suspend him and he does a little flip and a little pirouette. And he does a perfect swan dive into his mouth.
Right.
And then he's like... And he gets up and he immediately breaks the little ropes that are on him. And I think we're done with the rest of the brownies. Like, we don't see them anymore.
Right.
It's just the one that's inside of him. And Bruce Campbell is literally full of himself.
Yeah. And what do you do when you're full of yourself? Drink boiling water.
Yeah. How about a little hot chocolate, he says.
Yeah. And you know it's like super hot, like burn your throat super hot.
Well, he has a metal hand, but he picks it up with his fleshy hand and he's like, ow, and then continues to pick it up with his fleshy hand. And then it's the visual effect is obviously there's some dry ice in there. It must have been incredibly cold. And he like pours it in. He goes, oh, ah, and you hear it go glug, 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 glug down into him. And then you hear.
Yep. And then he starts like, he's like, ah, everything's finished. But it's not, because he starts scratching at his shoulder.
I have a thing against parasites, right? Oh, an eyeball shows up in his shoulder and he stumbles outside and he says the phrase, oh my God, it's getting bigger.
So this was a pausable moment when we saw this at Bruce Fest. And he says, spent all of our money on the shoulder. Didn't have any more special effects budget for this. So they just panned away from me as far away as they could. And then I just said that to give you to let your imagination know.
They do just stick a dummy head on him and he fights it for a little while.
Yeah.
And then they do a nice job of having him like somebody with like his hair, like, and they do a little crab walk together, but you only can see Bruce's face and the other face is blocked by like bushes and stuff. That was very cleverly done. And he eventually he splits into two, and there's a little slapstick like very much Three Stooges, like, and you're gonna get even more of this, like eye poking and like nose tweaking, not twerking, you can't twerk, but you tweak it more often, and he splits into two, and now there's two identical ashes.
This is also a great scene of fake shemping.
Yeah, there's a lot of like stooge gags.
Yes, and like he has to be acting with himself. So the fake shemp is like the
alternate. When you have a single actor who's portraying two versions mm-hmm. of himself, there's you have the camera behind mm-hmm. the fake shemp, and it's focused yes. on the actor. But then you'll have another when you do the opposite of it. You kind of just do it, but with reverse.
Yes, and Bruce really plays this up super hard so that you know that they're two different characters. So he's like, what are you? And he gets all like super animated and he's just like, I'm you're the good ash and I'm the bad ash. You're the good one. You're the goody goody two shoes.
Goody goody two shoes.
Goody goody two shoes.
Yeah. It's so good.
And he starts dancing around and then punching himself. And he like dances around and he punches himself. And he's like, ah, punch, punch, punch. And Bruce is getting the crap beat out of him by himself, which also feels like a metaphor.
That scene reminds me so much of your brother, because there is like the talking to fingers, which is a part of
his Tourette's,
and then just like the talking to himself.
And Abe likes the Stooges.
Yeah.
He likes a very straightforward slapstick comedy. If you could get Abraham to watch this movie, and you could not because I'm not much of a horror fan myself, right? Like, this would be his favorite scene. But I would never force him to watch anything. And I mean, he talks to his fingers, but it's not the same thing, really.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It definitely would be Abraham's favorite. He continues to beat him up. And then what happens? The gun comes out and you hear ka-tunk as it cocks. And he goes, boom.
And it shoots him right in the face.
Straight up in the face. And then we get the line.
Good, bad. I'm the guy with the gun.
It's so satisfying, but I feel like we can't let right-wing people know about it.
Well, like even
I'm
the
sorry.
Right, even the conservatives that do know about it are not smart enough to actually talk about it with their other friends.
Well, I just think that it's a logic. This is the thing that I think dances around the edge of a lot of gun issues for me, is that I believe the system is going to fail us, and so I need to be able to take control of the situation. A lot of gun ownership is rooted in fear. You don't think you're being a scaredy pants, but you're being a scaredy pants because you don't believe that the system can improve in a way that benefits everyone to a point where gun violence will be nil or close to nil. And so, like, if you use the phrase, good, bad, I'm the one with the gun, you're like, I get to make the ultimate decision because I have the power, because I'm a scaredy little two-shoes. And that's why I'm leaning more and more towards gun control.
Yeah.
And I don't think I want to be sorry about it.
No, you shouldn't have to be.
I feel like people should be autonomous, but I can't trust people to be responsible, which is ridiculous because it's the same logic that the people have for wanting guns.
So the whole idea of good man with a gun is actually flawed in its premise, because when you actually look at the statistics of the people who were able to stop gunmen from actually like being able to kill more people in mass shootouts, mm-hmm. I think there was like a study of all of them that happened in Texas, and like only like, what was it? Like less than 2% of all mass shootings are actually stopped by a good guy or someone with a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that are stopped are generally stopped by people getting the upper hand without killing the gunman.
Yeah, they get ambushed.
They do, but they also like they themselves, the people who stop the gunman, don't actually have any weapons on
them.
Yeah,
they get the gun away from the guy.
Yeah.
It turns out that getting the gun away from the guy is the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Getting the gun away from the guys. Okay. Wait, this is a hilarious movie. And I am so sorry about that turn. But I do call this the Ash hole scene.
Because with evil Ash unconscious, good Ash or gun Ash takes him back to the windmill, straps him down with all these heavy chains and starts a dismembering.
As you gotta do.
Right.
And then he digs a grave and he throws the body in a bag out, and then the head pops out and lands, and it was a really satisfying land. Like,
mm-hmm.
they incorporated the dummy head to the, like, him snapping awake in the hole. Like, it's a really good little slip, a little snap.
The way that it's shot, it gives me a lot of Pet Cemetery vibes, which made me think of sometimes dead is better.
It could be the same place.
Right.
Rocky grounds, quarries and such.
Well, no, because Pet Cemetery takes place in America and this takes place in England. Sorry.
Fine. Okay. So
sometimes he does come back.
He does.
Yeah. Sometimes dead is funnier because he's like, I will come back. And what does Ash say?
What's that on your face?
Huh?
And he throws dirt. Perfect. He fills the grave. I thought it was nice that he buried him. He wastes a lot of time burying people, frankly, in these three films. And then he puts a cross on it, and that has not helped in any film. But I feel like, okay, it's what you do at a grave, right?
This is what the Christians call dying to yourself. Not really.
So
you can cut.
So, nighttime graveyard, everyone?
Onward, steed. Also, three books.
He's like, what is this? Nobody said anything about three books. What am I supposed to do?
So he opens up the first one that's closest, and what does he get?
I call this one sucks.
I call this one campy body horror because he gets sucked into the black hole. But then but being like the jefe that he is, he claws himself. He climbs his way out, mm-hmm. but his face is all elongated.
And then he goes like, yar, 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 to like fix it. And, he goes, yar, 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 and there's like great transition. It this particular makeup, because he really does have like a 3 foot long face and then a 2 foot long face and then like a regular giant chin like he always has. But It feels very much a Beetlejuice in the way that it really plays.
I watched Beetlejuice recently because I had never seen it before. And I was like, okay, I want to know what it's all about.
I called you Lids for years because of Beetlejuice.
And I watched the animated show, so I had a cursory understanding. But like seeing that, I was like, oh, yeah, Beetlejuice. Totally makes sense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then he ends up closing that one and he opens up. He goes to the second one.
Well, he puts that one down and he goes, whoa, wrong book.
And then he goes to the second one. But then he's like, you see the camera position with the books in front of him, and Ash like goes to the one on the left as you're looking at it from the camera perspective.
Uh-huh.
And then he's like, maybe it's the one on the right. Maybe it's the one on the left. It is. He's trying to figure out which one it is.
Then he puts his hand down on one and it bites him.
Yeah.
I call this bites and bets.
Yeah, because the book turns into a flying book. And I was like, mm-hmm. the ghost trees seek blood.
And it also, the plot is for our tie. No, not plot. The Vesta Narada from Doctor Who.
That's what I was like, oh, this book would have felt so at home in them.
Yeah. Yeah, it would. It literally turns into a neck biter.
I was glad that it didn't go like face hugger, though.
Yeah.
It could have.
I mean,
Aliens was, I think the first Alien movie was out by this time.
Mm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it flies around. He goes to chuck it and it flies back to its spot. And he goes, oh, I'll get back to you later.
He never does.
No.
And then he's like, oh, then this must be the right book. But there's something he has to do first.
He has to say the words.
He has to say the words. Oh,
that's right. Those words.
Klaatu, Barada.
So the whole point of this is that he can't remember the last word. And
he's like, oh, it's an N-word. I know it.
Yeah. So he tries to fudge it. And so when he can't, he just coughs. And he's like, yep, I totally said the words. Everyone, exactly the way they're supposed to.
I call this one, right book, wrong words.
Hey, me too. Air high five. And so he grabs the book, but because the spell wasn't dead, because that's not how magic works. You can't fudge with magic.
So the dead rise.
Army of darkness. But they never actually say that. They never say it.
No.
No.
I thought maybe Merlin's army has risen against us. An army of darkness has risen against us.
Oh, okay.
He might. Feel free to fact check us, Sean, or anyone. We are shockedandapplaud@gmail.com. Get to it.
Feel free to engage with the algorithm.
Okay. So I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Skeletons are bad enemies. Like, they're just bad at fight. They don't have muscles. They don't have ligaments. They don't have anything holding them together. You could just push them over like a Jenga tower. But they're hilarious. And they'll never not be hilarious.
Right. Because when Ash grabs the book, he's trying to make a run for it. But he gets grabbed because it's a graveyard.
Uh-huh.
And he gets grabbed by the skeleton hand and he falls down. And then all these other hands come out and they start grabbing at him.
And they totally slip. They're like, blah, 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 yak, snick, poo, poo, bang, ding.
They take out his tongue at one point. And then he does that whole moving his fingers up.
Like to stop the two eye poke, but then they come in both ways.
Sides.
That is a classic Stooges bit.
Yeah.
I can just imagine Sam Raimi thinking about this, looking at everybody, talking to the puppeteers and saying, okay, let me puppet this.
Yeah, he would do that. Like, it's just like, just mm-hmm. let me take a stab at him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, lightning resurrection of evil Ash.
I think he gets away with the book first.
Yeah.
And then we see, oh, it's fantastic. I didn't notice it till today that he like comes up as like different Lego pieces and then snaps with lightning back together.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's pretty good. They must have spent a couple $1,000 on that. And then he goes,
oh, I don't have this one.
Oh, I have it in my heart.
Say it.
I live again.
It's perfect delivery. Okay, so when he's being cut up on the table from the initial blast, he just kind of has like buckshot spray across his mouth, right? And then in this scene, he's all like super gnarly. He's very juicy in the whole...
Like decomp happened super quick.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. But you'll see it actually stage out throughout the rest of the film. He continuously decomposes in the course of one evening, which makes me wonder what the hell is in the dirt in England.
Yeah. Ash riding away is just sort of like, I'm fed up with all of this. I got him the book. I'm going to get out of here. I just want to go home. And
that's what he does when he gets back. He like pours water on his face, which makes his hair look super stupid because he always has really great hair. But like now he's supposed to be a weasel.
Yeah.
And it's where I dislike him the most in the entire film. He's just like, I want to go home. That's what's the deal. Well, did you say the words?
Well, I said them exactly as I was supposed to. And it's very unconvincing. And
did you say them precisely?
Maybe not exactly precisely.
But I got most of them or whatever. And then so they walk away. They're like, fine, we'll give you your part of the deal, right? And then she comes over and she's like, oh, but I still believe thou will save us from this evil. And he's all like, oh, I just want to go home. But those things that you said to me last night.
Those were just, oh, you have a button.
Well, that's just what we call pillow talk, baby. That's all.
What's great is that like there's like this confidence in Bruce Campbell's delivery for most of the lines. But in this scene, you can tell his delivery is very sheepish. He's like, I'm letting these people down and that's not something that I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he says, you know, it's just pillow talk, baby, you know that it's him lying and he really does care about her.
Mm-hmm.
But Sheila loses her faith in Ash, good Ash. And so she runs away.
Except
the castle is attacked.
And a winged beast runs down Sheila and snatches her up. And he immediately turns. He's like, and he like runs up the thing and he tries to stab at the thing. And then he's all like, well, shit.
Yeah.
He immediately, his whole character shifts to, I meant what I said to her, kind of. I don't think he's ever insincere with his affection. It's just that he's very into doing every available female, it's woman, that he's like around.
You know? Yeah, like he's very monogamous when a woman is with. When
he's only sleeping with one at a time, but he's sleeping with her super hard.
But
no, wait,
he only sleeps with one woman at a time, but only if she's in his field of vision.
Yes, but he's very devoted to that field of vision.
He doesn't have object permanence.
I mean, he really doesn't get tied down too hard. I mean, he banged her yesterday, and he banged his girlfriend like 2 days before.
Yeah.
Anyways, they all get snatched up by deadites eventually. That's what you can rest assured if you hook up with Ash Williams.
Ashley Joanne Ash Williams.
Yeah. Okay.
So
we go to the graveyard.
Yes, we have the whole digging up soldiers a la the orcs from Lord of the Rings.
Did you notice the boobs?
The boobs? Oh, yes, because they're like, you got some skeletons that are like saying, and again, like, it sounds like they're going to be turning him into deadites, but it's also very sexual.
Yeah, and the evil Ash is forcing Sheila to kiss him, which is super gross.
Yeah.
But like the big pan out shot where it's all happening feels very like, it feels very Lord of the Rings in a way, just because you see the building of an army, which you don't often see. Like the army shows up, but you don't see the coming up of it in a lot of stuff. So that's interesting. I find that kind of thing interesting, and especially because Sam Raimi does a really good job. I care less about the humans in this, to be fair, in terms of like they're just humans. I'm familiar with humans, but like the deadites and the skeletons as they prepare, it's fascinating. I mean, other than the fact that they're forcing women to do anything,
right?
Other than that, everyone else seems super willing to do the thing,
right? If you take out the ugly non-consent aspect from it, it is a very interesting, like very cool, it feels very heavy metal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
at one point, one of the skeletons gets pulled out of his grave and is like, you live again, now pick up a shovel and get to work.
It's very cool.
I have a quick comment. That's
a Jen thought.
A Jen thought. Jen fact.
Jen thought.
Jen thought.
Greg Nicotero did a lot of the makeup effects. Greg Nicotero, the director of most of the Walking Dead episodes.
Oh.
He also did. Was it Werewolf by Night? He did some work in there.
I didn't see Werewolf by Night. So is that's the Marvel property?
Yeah.
Okay, we go back to the castle,
mm-hmm.
and we get our first Ted Raimi that I could absolutely tell. He's dressed as a knight. He's standing by the king. He's all like, they're like, what are we going to do? And I'm like, Ted Raimi number one. And the king is like, what should we do? Blah, blah, blah. Bruce turns around from the top where he's been trying to fight off this thing that stole Sheila but got away. And now she's like,
yeah.
And he's all like, well, we must fight. I for one, am tired of running away. And King Arthur's like, everyone else is gone. There's like 60 of us. And he's all like, that's enough. right? And then it cuts to like everybody down at the middle of the courtyard. They're like, it goes to Ted Raimi number two, and it's like less than a minute. So like hilarious one and two. I'm like, poor Ted, right? And he's just like,
I'll stand behind you.
The blacksmith's the first one to actually speak.
And then it's Ted.
Yeah.
And then everybody else starts up a chorus. And then King Arthur's heart is like, yes, yes. And he actually is standing, Bruce, when he stands like this and he's just like all with me. It's the picture that is shown at the end of Evil Dead 2 that shows that he's a part of a prophecy that he doesn't want to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like a visual conclusion to that like little loop.
Right.
Ted Raimi plays four characters. The cowardly warrior who doesn't want to die. The man who shouts, you can count on my steel.
Okay, but I have the other two written down. Do you want to do them when we come to them? You can give it all away right now.
Okay.
I mean, that's a lady's choice.
Well, if you can point them out, let's...
I will. I did. I wrote it down.
Okay.
Also, another important fact of the scene is Ash says, go get Henry's men because that will give us more people.
Okay, so we go back.
I just, my last thought on this scene is it was another Lord of the Rings moment with Ted Raimi where he's like, and my steel, and my axe, and my arrows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody does say, and my arrows. Mm-hmm. Not exactly that, but he's like, oh, you have my bow.
Yeah. Very a la Fellowship of the Ring.
Nice. Very, very nice. We cut back to the graveyard and Evil Ash is like, behold your queen or whatever he says. And she lifts a veil and she has like a Bride of Frankenstein face with like a red lip and her hair is big and like huge. Her hair is so big. And she goes, do you know?
The bigger the hair, the more evil she is.
The bigger the hair, the closer to Satan.
Oh, but you obviously have it written down.
She only has two really excellent lines. And this is the first one. And she goes, I may be bad, but I feel good.
She's got that whole like kind of like lip movement thing.
Yeah, she like over enunciates it real hard.
Yeah.
So now is the scene with the trunk of the car.
This is where they bring in the car. Or do you have a fact about it?
Yeah, let's get into the details on it, and then I'll. But it is about the trunk of the car.
So this is basically a montage where they bring in the car. Ash opens up his trunk.
Let me do this behind you. Let's get down to business. To the beat. The horn.
As when he opens it up, he's got like, you know, bullets. He's got like chemistry 101 book. And then
you're the deadest lot I've ever met.
Sorry, that's messing with me.
Soft up.
Okay. He trains his people to go ahead and fight. He gives the chemistry book, which apparently has the recipe for gunpowder in it.
No, not in my American history book. I mean, science book, but
okay.
Whatever.
Okay, like, I like the idea that he lives in a world where, like, even if the formula for gunpowder is known, people don't abuse it. They only use guns for things like defeating the dead, which is very American. And like, as far as like Americana goes,
One person in Evil Dead 2 does get shot with a gun. A human person does.
Okay. So was the person doing anything?
They were standing outside a door.
And was it an accident?
Yes.
Okay. So it wasn't an intentional, I'm going to go into this place and cause a mass shooting. Like that's what would happen in our America. But in Ash Ketchum's America, or sorry, not Ash Ketchum. That's a Pokemon guy. In Ash Williams America, he goes, they can give you the formula for gunpowder and people just aren't going to be that crazy.
But if you make it in medieval Europe, the wizard is going to hold it over an open flame just to check it out.
Well, I mean, does he know that? I would think that he would be like, no, this is going to explode. So you want to keep it away from fire.
Okay, but it's something he would have overlooked to say. Saying the right words is not his deal.
Giving Great Britain a 600-year leap in explosives?
No, China had gunpowder like 1300.
Yeah, but they didn't. Yeah, but they didn't start trading until like the 1800s.
I'm just saying that they didn't invent it. Oh, are you saying that they?
Just giving them a head start from where they already were.
Oh yeah, because they didn't have it till later, late 1700.
Maybe 1600s. But don't really know much about the naval fleets, but obviously gunpowder would have been involved in cannonballs and things like that.
Yeah, which makes me think of the 1700s.
Well, they had guns in Shakespeare's time. That was not unheard of.
And that's true.
So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, knowing the trade of everything, gunpowder would be something that would, maybe it's not mass produced as much as it is in like the 1800s, but it's still, I could see like it, like eventually get that knowledge at least.
Thanks, Applauder, for joining us for part two of our discussion of 1992's Army of Darkness. We hope you've enjoyed our plot walkthrough and discussion so far, because we've still got one more week to finish the plot, discuss our remaining Sean facts, and conclude with our shocked and applaudable moments. Are you still waiting for your evil doppelganger to arrive and want to be prepared for an epic battle of film trivia? Verbal Diorama, with host M, has got you covered with a celebration of the making of movies through the coming together of teams and extraordinary cast and crew. And Movie Drone has impressions, listener questions, new release reviews, and retro reviews. Check out links to these shows in this release's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and someone with an actual dead name, Jen. Do you ever wish there was some magical words you could recite that would return you to a state of creative satisfaction? Why not leave us an episode review on podchaser.com, a rating on Spotify, or a podcast review on Apple Podcasts? We cherish your input and will most likely read your review on our next episode. Even if it sounds like it was made through ChatGPT and has no soul. We'll be back next week for our conclusion of our discussion of this 90s action-adventure horror comedy. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.